All right, welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati. Jason Williams, Sherry Coolidge, Silent Phil, always on the ones and twos. He is always here and ready to go. Sherry, special guest today. Hello, by the way.
Good morning, Jay.
Special guest today is back by popular demand. A repeat guest from a, he was here last summer, maybe. 3CDC president and CEO, Steve Leeper. And really looking forward to having him.
I mean, there's so much to talk about. He had, you know, some huge news out of 3CDC last week with the Foundry. You know, that's filling up. That's the old Macy's building across from Fountain Square. A lot of exciting things coming to that project. We're going to talk about that with him. We're still looking for a main tenant there. Who's going to be that, you know, top floor, name the building tenant? So we'll see if we can get him to break some news on that. And we could talk to him about a thousand things that we've talked about on this podcast so many times. The Court Street pedestrian plaza, you know, you can always talk about what's going on in Over the Rhine. It dovetails with so much we've just been talking about in the last couple of weeks on the podcast. And we're going to ask him about the Millennium Hotel project, which I wrote about last week in case some of our listeners noticed.
Yeah. No, I'm glad you brought that up because that is certainly something we want to ask him about. As 3CDC is the, I believe, the developer on a south lot just south of the convention center, an area where there's been talk about potentially a new convention hotel. So certainly Steve Leeper is keeping tabs on this convention hotel situation. So we'll ask him about that. And speaking of the Millennium, go ahead.
More than 2 years ago, the Hamilton County Commissioners, really with the new commission, kind of, you know, a shift with Democrats, were like, what are the priorities down here? What are the priorities downtown? That list was long. At the top of the list, bringing a new convention center hotel because ours wasn't getting it done. Conventions were avoiding us. And here, for real readers, is why that matters, because I think a lot of people are like, what do I care if a convention comes to Cincinnati? If you like to eat at restaurants in Cincinnati, you have to bring the conventioners here Monday through Thursday. You need 10,000 is kind of the number that gets thrown around. 10,000 people to eat at our restaurant, shop at the stores, to keep your downtown vibrant.
That's right.
We're all going to go downtown on the weekends and enjoy, you know, all these restaurants we've talked about on the podcast in recent weeks. But you need these conventioners. And if these conventions are like, no thanks, Cincinnati, it is a huge problem. So, you know, okay, it's the top of the list.
Yep.
You know, then a lot of back and forth. What Rob Smijunas, developer out of Oakley, comes up with a plan. There's a dueling plan on a different site by the convention center. And we covered the heck out of all of that. But, you know, there's a pandemic and no real plans. Like, no one's really discussing it. Not only is there a pandemic that really is going to slow the hotel growth, it's like, that's a real thing.
That's not an excuse in this.
Who's talking about this project, really, over these last 2 years? And now, because you can say you have to have the plan, you're not going to get a hotel for, you know, 18 months, 2 years after you have that plan. So this is all in flux, right?
Yeah.
And in the meantime, the port decides, the port's going to run this project. County puts some money in. This is a port project on that site. And the person who secured the hotel, Rob Smijunas, is due some money. And there's a huge court fight over exactly how much money that is.
Yes. Big back and forth. And, you know, Rob Smijunas had a plan toward the end of 2019 to bring a new Hilton Hotel to the Millennium site. He's the one that he broke through and got the Millennium Hotel owner to sell the building, something no one else has been able to do.
Singapore billionaire, I have to say. This person seemed, you know, he owns this Millennium Group. It's like Millennium and Hawthorne. I forget the actual name of it. But, you know, it seemed like, how are we ever going to get this guy in Singapore? That just seems like really out there. And, you know, Rob has a story of sitting around his house one night and is like, let me see what I can do. Tracks down an email for him and emails him. This is how Rob tells the story. And he emailed right back and is like, yeah, let's talk.
Yep. And so We could be building a brand new hotel right now had Rob Smigunis's plan been executed, and that the so-called business leaders of this town would have gotten behind it and said, hey, let's let the private sector develop this in Cleveland and Columbus and Atlanta and many other cities around the country.
Using the same format that Rob Smigunis hoped to bring to this project.
Where you have your convention facilities authority essentially run the hotel, or
which is a board. It's appointed by our public board.
Correct. Yeah. We haven't done it here before, and so we can get really far in the weeds on this, but the bottom line here is that there is no plan. There's a big legal fight going on between the developer and the Port Authority, and for what do people really need to know is that there's no plan right now for a new hotel.
But this lawsuit is kind of what I wrote about, really has exposed, I used the word, I was describing it to somebody, like ripped the wig off of how business gets done in this city. It just, the ins and outs, the business community, who are the players, who's texting, who's talking, what campaign donations are there? And it is really just an inside look of how things get done that we have never seen before. We see these public meetings. We see the back and forth. We see campaign donations, a favorite thing of mine to do, is kind of go through those these days. But this was just, the Inquirer obtained a copy of the Port CEO Laura Bruner's deposition. Under oath, we heard how deals get done.
Yeah. So we'll continue to follow your coverage on that. And meanwhile, let's jump over and bring on 3CDC's Steve Leeper. All right, special guest time here on the That's So Cincinnati podcast. Please to welcome back to the podcast, Steve Leeper. Steve, how are you?
How are you, Jason? Thanks for having me.
Great to have you. And fresh off, let's just jump right in. Fresh off the news last week of Jeff Ruby's moving to the new foundry building that you guys are developing on Fountain Square.
Yeah. So for those that don't know what the foundry is, it's the former Macy's department store right there on Fountain Square. And it's going to be a mixed use project, office above and commercial first floor, and opened up to the square. And we're going to expand a sidewalk out, so you'll have that much more outdoor dining area there. And open nano walls, so you'll see the folks dining in the restaurant. I think it's a great location. Signed two office leases already, Turner Construction and Deloitte. We had a restaurateur from Nashville, Terry Rayleigh, that's opening up a restaurant there as well, a French restaurant. And then Jeff Ruby and Brittany, actually, with a colleague of mine, Adam Gelter, were walking down to the site, and we were actually talking to another restaurateur at the time. And we were asking Brittany, Adam was asking Brittany about this restaurateur, what she knew about him. And she said, well, why? And she goes, well, because we're thinking about moving him into this spot. So she said, well, let me come down. She didn't even know we were redeveloping the building at the time. And they took a look at the site, and she said, I'd like to come here. Now, the complication was that they have an existing lease and with our good friends from Town Properties, and Neil and I are close, and he's on our board. And we said, Neil, if this doesn't make sense for you, then we're not going to do it. And he said, no, I want him to see his dream. He wanted Jeff to see his dream. So they worked out. They're going to keep that space as a sort of where you can have events there, and maybe do some takeout,
Yeah.
And then this would be about 50% bigger in terms of the number of seats.
I will tell you, like, after the pandemic, if you want to go to Jeff Ruby's, I hope you're planning 6 months in advance.
Yeah.
It's tough to get a reservation. There's only so many seats. And I think there's a little bit of social distancing, not tons of them, but yeah. It's hard. I mean, the bigger space, they can use it.
Yeah, they can. And I think it's going to be a nice draw, and it complements our tenants. It's going to be exciting because then Fifth Street, which used to be covered with the skywalk that went over to Crew Tower. That's gone now. So we're going to open that up. And that's always been sort of a dead area too. And we're and same with Ray Street. It's getting opened up for outdoor dining and restaurants as well. So we're going to wrap it around. We have another – we have two tenants that are interested in the third floor. So we're fortunate enough to have two folks.
Is that going to be your named building tenants? Is the third floor the floor?
No. No, no. Actually, there's third and there's a fourth floor there as well. But the building will be Foundry. But they'll have the signage, whoever that – they'll have the, their main signage up there. And then what's interesting is we are planning to, across the street, what we call the West Grove of the of Fountain Square, the one that sits down below and then you walk up the steps. We're sort of cordoning that off, and it's going to be a sort of bar area, and we're bringing in a one of those container bars. You ever see those? They're like it's almost a container that you shipping container, and it converts into a bar on either side, and you can sit out there as if you're sitting at a bar.
Hello, that's Instagram. Fantastic. That's where I've seen them. Instagram.
Is that people opening post soon? Those.
Yeah, that's opening soon. Yeah, we hope to have that in a couple weeks.
Great.
So you could conceivably be sitting out there with all the excitement of the two restaurants that are across the street, and then we have a couple other that we're talking to as well. So
feel free to name.
You're
drop.
Excited about. You're excited. I can tell you're excited about this project.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Because it's so critical. First of all, we need a good thing happening in downtown.
Definitely.
I mean, downtown is a shadow of itself. That what Fifth Third did at their headquarters is incredible.
It's really cool.
It's really nice. And it's just
a big city feel to it.
It does. And that stage that they built for us is incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, it's these things that they don't get credit for, but that was a couple million dollars that they invested in our community. And it just changes our ability to do events. You no longer have sort of the butt end of the stage right there on Fifth and Vine.
That kind of closes things off.
It
now
does.
It's just more open. And
now what the real important thing for us to do is to connect Fountain Square to the Convention Center District, which is a whole nother set of issues here. But
yeah, let's talk about it. Jason and I talked about it at the beginning of the show.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah, we did.
I don't know if you saw, I wrote a story about
it. I did. Well, look, there's the good news and bad news. Let's go the bad news first. The bad news is you go over around our convention center, and our convention center is tired. It needs upgraded. Secondly, around it is nothing but blighted properties, either surface parking lots or blighted properties. That's the bad news. The good news is the vast majority of that property is under public ownership, which means, most cities, there's acres of land now that – with good, smart planning, we can do the right thing around that convention center. So
let's set the scene real quick.
Okay.
So to the south of it is 435 Elm, which is at the center of a lot of the corruption, but city-owned port. I think they sold it to the port, actually. Port Authority owns it,
and that soon will be demolished.
Huge space.
Huge space.
Something to do there.
It was ugly when it was built, and it's even uglier now.
That's a true story. To the west, right at the catty corner to the Enquirer. To the west of that, then, is that surface lot, right?
Well, to the west of it is a parking garage.
Parking garage.
Which is up to
an ailing parking garage. It's hard to get in and out
of. Some goofy looking little skate park thing.
Yeah, which is public land. Connects right to, so that too is under public ownership. And then there's the parking lot that we got under control and then deeded over to the port, which is the 74,000 square foot parcel there that we genuinely feel that's a great location, still believe it's a great location for a hotel.
Who owns the parking garage?
It's owned by the Carroll family out of Nashville. And it's Monroe Carroll was the owner of Central Parking Nationwide.
Okay.
And they kept a couple assets. We've been in discussions with them back and forth about the future disposition of that property. We have a good relationship with them.
That's good.
So, it's a possibility that could be part of, but, they own the property and I don't want to suggest that it's going to be sold. But
so that's all south. Then to the east of the convention center, across the street from Elm Street, is the Millennium Hotel, which is still being torn down.
Yes, and will be for a while. Yeah.
Hard. Is that more difficult than we thought? I feel like I've heard that.
Oh, I don't know. Michael O'Rourke demolition. They're as good as it gets. So
it was supposed to be a year-long project.
Yeah,
right?
I assume that they evaluated the potential of implosion, but they probably thought
it's
Mike knows what he's doing.
Connected to so much stuff.
Yeah, they know what they're doing. So, you know, that's 66,000 square feet, and so you know, is that potentially a location to extend the convention center? I don't know. I think people need to sit down and start thinking about what we need to do. And in the meantime, you know, it's probably not a bad idea that we evaluate the condition of the existing convention center. Can we do some things today, even though we may not be expanding today, but can we do some things within that convention center to make it more up-to-date, less tired?
I mean, it's an empty box, and I think people expect more than that now. Yeah. It's just a big space, and it's not – you can have a convention in there, but does it compare to other convention centers?
Well, I mean, my previous life, when I was running the Sports and Exhibition Authority in Pittsburgh, we built the two stadiums and a new convention center, and it's a little bigger than this convention center, but in terms of the quality of it, and you look at that convention center and look at this one, you know, we should strive to do better. And I think there's a movement about that we do that and start thinking that district is critical to our downtown, and when visitors come into our community, we need to show better than we're showing right now.
Who is in charge of making this happen? Is there like some sort of point person?
No, I think the powers to be are rethinking how this moves forward, and I think everybody, you know, we can all sit back and Monday morning quarterback on this, which I don't think is very productive. The fact is we now have a property under our control that's a critical piece that allows us
two properties. Now,
yes. Really. Yes.
Under public. Yeah.
Yes. But yeah. I'm referring to your article in the Millennium.
No, you know what? I'm happy. Yeah. I'm going to keep writing about how all that deal came together, and I'm happy with my story, but you're right. It is, you know what, this happened. Finally, 20 years I've been here, people are like, we need to get control of this, and now we do have it.
We have control of it.
That, it is, it's so key.
And so we ought to just start looking at the bright side of this, and that we now have a lot of property under control, and let's not do anything stupid here. Let's think about this and be bold, fiscally responsible, but bold. I think you can do both. And I do think everybody is on the same page here. I think our political leaders are actually trying to think about this in a comprehensive manner. I think they're excited about the potential. And I think we got to be excited about something instead of, you know, tinkling on each other.
So is the ideal bigger, broader vision for this new convention center hotel on the south lot, potential for expansion of the convention center over Elm to where the Millennium is now?
I think that is a viable option. I mean, I don't think it's the only option, but when you really think about it, it's the most viable. It's where you get the contiguous ballroom space heading eastward. The site to the south, quite frankly, is I think it's big enough for not only a convention center, but other uses. Could be more residential, could be, you know, more hospitality, could be entertainment. There's all kinds of possibilities here, and we just need to get off our butts and start focusing on it.
You're so right about how, I mean, you walk over there right now.
Oh,
and it's
goodness
just
gracious.
And, you know, we talked about is it the Convention Place Mall? I think it's what it used to be called. And you're just like, what was going on here years ago?
Of?
Obviously, none of us were around, but when this whole thing was like.
Malls used to be the thing.
This is the middle of our city.
I know.
Malls used to be the thing,
the
though.
Problem
shopping.
With being old like me is that there's probably people in Pittsburgh saying, what was he thinking of when he did that in Pittsburgh? 30 years ago, you know, 20 years ago. I mean, we all do things sometimes.
The difference is Pittsburgh moved quicker than us, probably because you were there to
that.
Get something done, right? Like, we still haven't done anything. Like, we're still in the same spot.
Well, I would beg to differ on that. I mean, look at the progress we've made downtown. Look at the progress we've made, you know, with the banks and with, I mean, over the Rhine transformed in about a decade. I mean, and that's not
that's
easy
true.
Thing
we
to
were
do.
Doing that. That's
I mean,
true.
So, and that took foresight. And, you know, the city council and Mayor Cranley, or not, Mayor Cranley was the head of the finance committee at the time, and Charlie Lucan was the mayor. I mean, the way they created those TIF districts was absolutely brilliant. I mean, that's, I saw that when I got recruited here. I saw, you know, they had these Robin Hood, TIF districts that they created. They didn't do an over the Rhine district and a downtown district. They bifurcated it and did a OTR downtown east and west. And so we've been able to take the you know, the growth in over the downtown and put it into over the Rhine. And that's how you got, you know, Ziegler Park. That's how you got Washington Park. That's how we got our first couple phases of redevelopment done.
Are we a long way away on that new hotel?
Well, I don't know. I think it's first we got to make sure that everybody that's involved in this is on the same page. And I believe we are. We've been talking together. I think we want to be strategic in the timing when we go out and start procuring potential developers on this site, because, you know, every developer is going to come in here and say, oh, you know, the market's so bad, I need more government aid, you know. So you need to be able to push back. I think we need to go back and restudy the market. Like, where are we today in terms of occupancy and market share and average daily rents and things like that? So I think those are the first couple steps we can take. And I think maybe an evaluation of our existing convention center on a parallel track wouldn't be a bad idea too.
Where does the arena fit into that? You have a lot. You wake up in the morning and you're like, what's my day going to look like?
That's one thing I think we need to prioritize things and control what we can control. That is an extremely difficult challenge. We obviously have a property down there that's a challenge. It's dated, and I'm probably being generous with that terminology.
You are.
And the issue is, you know, how do you finance it? You know, and in Pittsburgh, we had a hockey team, you know, that could be the master tenant. And when you have
such a big deal,
professional team that can be the master tenant, it can drive, you know, you then add on another 100 and 120 dates, into that arena. And, you know, we're running out of opportunities and revenue streams to fund things. You know, we had the sales taxes, but now the one sales tax is tied up with the stadiums, the existing stadiums, and now the museum sales tax, needed to support the county's operating budget. So there's just so many taxes you can raise before people are saying. And then even if you finance it, which I believe arena is important to the community, don't get me wrong here, you then need to figure out a way to operate it in a way that it doesn't start bleeding you every year. Because it's bad enough for the capital cost, but what you got to worry about is that you're dipping into some pocket every year and it becomes a boondoggle.
And I believe I've heard that it's been, and I want to make sure to not offend anyone or upset anyone.
Time for everything. Go ahead, Jay.
Not you, but like you're looking out into the future, and like none of us may even be here by then, but by the time the stadium taxes are to essentially be, I mean, the stadium debt's paid off, is there a potential maybe to even use some of that stadium tax money for an arena? And that's still at least a decade away, I think.
Yeah, I think you need to look at, you know, the different sources that are might be available, whether or not that existing tax. I mean, we essentially, when we were working on the stadiums in Pittsburgh, took an existing tax. We didn't increase a tax.
Yeah.
So there's ways that you can structure your debt going forward that could allow you to do that. There's other taxes that conceivably you could impose, you know, sort of rental car taxes and things like that, that the local community doesn't pay for, that many communities have used as a potential user tax. So, you know, maybe I shouldn't be out here talking about raising people's taxes. I shouldn't be doing that. On the other hand, there's only so many options when it comes to a public venue like that.
Right.
Let's talk about the 4th Street project, because that has really, it seems like, been a game changer for 4th Street, which is, I guess, south and catty corner to all the things we're talking about now. Do you feel like redoing that parking garage has kind of spurred the 4th Street, like, historic district of the little shops?
Well, I don't – the Loring folks and Dan Schimberg and others who have invested down there, I don't want to start – I mean, those guys were bold and took the steps.
Just for our listeners, you're talking 4th and Race. Kind of essentially behind what is the Hyatt and Saks?
Yeah, which right the old Pope's garage. It had the Pope's, that ramp.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it almost improved by just knocking that property down. Yeah. If we did nothing else, we made a major investment in the community. But those folks on 4th Street are pretty bold. And to suggest that that project was the stimulus, I think might be reaching a little bit in terms of – but it just physically makes that block much more attractive. And to the extent that we can support those folks down there on 4th Street is really important. And
there's
to drive
cutest
traffic.
Plant store for people who like plants.
Yeah, and there's a brewery down there, and a lot of residents, you know. And so we need to make sure that these little pockets, we're not competing with one pocket versus another pocket of the city, but rather complement one another. And that's why sort of connecting that, getting that convention district again, you know, underway, and then importantly, as we've been focusing on, is getting that connection between Fountain Square and Over the Rhine, that north section of downtown, that it's oftentimes dotted with surface parking lots or vacant buildings, and we got to hopefully we can keep people from coming into our community buying buildings and doing nothing with them, and we see that all over town here, and it's very frustrating. You know, they say they're going to start something, they never do it. There's that building right at Catty Corner at the Tri-State Building, which is there at 5th and Walnut, which was where the news stand used to be on the first floor.
Oh yeah, yep.
And you know, that was supposed to be a
right
hotel,
off the Fountain Square,
and nothing.
Yeah.
You know, nothing's
right
happening
with everything
there.
That's going to be happening there. We
Terrace
won't want
is
that
still
to be...
sitting there.
Terrace,
you know,
yeah.
Garfield Ooh. Is still sitting there. So,
well, that terrace is just that's a behemoth,
and it's been like that since, you know, essentially I got into town 17 years ago.
Yeah.
And so these are the kinds of things that we got to try to avoid going forward, and we probably need to do our due diligence as we review people coming into town here and allegedly investing in our town.
I mean, I don't know how much control you have over that, but knowing. I do, like, zero. Knowing, right? Because like, the beginning conversations about the millennium were, I went back and I was reading all of the stories, and I did write a timeline for anybody who's interested, because there's no date I don't know about the Millennium Hotel now. I went really far back. But, you know, people at the beginning were like, it's owned by a Singapore company. And then what? Like, then you're trying to deal with, who are you dealing with? You don't know. And so that kind of, I think, caught people by surprise.
Yeah. That's the case, so...
Will it be 3CDC that leads the charge on the hotel?
I don't think we have that concluded yet. I think it'll be various parties involved to try to use all the resources that we have, because there's many organizations that are involved now that bring a lot to the table. There's the CVB, there's the port, there's the city and county. There's 3CDC, there's the chamber. I mean, we can go down the list of people who have an interest in this.
Well, the county would be wise to defer to you guys on this, I believe.
I think the county is excited about what the opportunities can be there. That's my understanding.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like even 5 years ago, the idea to be talking about all of these things that are really south of, you know, Central Avenue is shocking. Where are you at with, because we kind of all thought that Over the Rhine would be south of Liberty first, then north of Liberty. I mean, are you just, is that market forces now? Like, what's happening north of Liberty?
No, it's not market forces. Some market forces and some not. I mean, if you go north of Liberty, and particularly after the pandemic, and even we see parts of south of Liberty and Over the Rhine where we still have some challenges. We have some public safety issues still remaining, pockets of it. But you go north of Liberty on Vine Street, for instance, and it's vacant properties all the way up the street. And, you know, you take it up to where the old Finley Playground, where it was fenced off for years. Now the Rec Commission has subsequently opened it up again. But working with the city and the Cincinnati Rec Commission, we've now been asked to see how we can create a community center. I want to use that term, community center, and maybe additional athletic venues up in that area, and create really a state-of-the-art facility. The Over the Rhine Rec Center again, dated, needs some investment. So can we be bold and create a community center that's not only has athletic facilities in it, really incredible athletic facilities, aquatic center, basketball courts, be able to do leagues at night, but also introduce things that we could have a health and wellness center in there, you know, after school programs for kids, so that, you know, there's a place for them to go, you know, doing, you know, late night basketball leagues so we can get some of these young men off the street, young women off the street. And they with that athletics, and I've seen it with my own son, and it's so important, you know, both for men and my daughter, you know, that getting involved, it can be a confidence builder. And more importantly, it can get you out of doing stuff that's either, activity it's not, conducive to a bright future, or, you know, you're not sitting there on your phone all day. And so we think there's a real opportunity here for the community, where you can do, you know, educational programs there coupled with, really a fantastic. And then, you know, I don't know, we're going through that right now. We're doing an outreach effort with the community on what they want. So
it has to do with Grant Park too.
Yes.
Right.
So we could, you know, think about all those parcels. There's a little pocket park there on Elm. There's the existing rec center site. So that you look at all those pieces that we own as a public, and what's the best and highest use of those? You know, do we do another pool? Well, I think, you know, and my gut is that an indoor pool is definitely needed, but you know, we're going to have 50,000 swimmers in Ziegler Park this year.
Wow.
I mean, that's a ton.
If you go, it's popular. It's really crowded. You did want Ziegler to be bigger than it was, right?
Yeah, and well, we were limited on the land that we could get. But, you know, do we do another outdoor pool? You know, we really need to listen to the community.
I've seen the need for another outdoor pool, sure.
Well, could you do an indoor outdoor pool, you know, so that in the wintertime you can – you know, where it's conceivable that some of the schools could come and use it because there's a lack of facilities. So, and then, you know, can we do, you know, multiple courts so that we can have, you know, tournaments and things like that for kids? And so anyway, I'm excited about this. I think it can be an absolute game changer. And then in addition, we, along with some of our partners like the Model Group and Urban Sites and 3CDC, we have acquired property up in that area, and we're thinking through some mixed income, mixed use, similar to Wilkeman, a la Wilkeman, mm-hmm. That I think can really complement this effort and be a real change agent in that area.
I do want to talk about the Wilkeman really quick, because it's kind of like we've written a lot about it now, and it's kind of like, oh, is it done? But it is. It's the kind of project when people say affordable housing in Cincinnati, like, that people, others are hoping will be the model going forward. Tell us about that project and how, if it can be replicated again.
Well, yes, it can be replicated. I mean, it's a mixed income, mixed use. So there's commercial on the first floor. In many instances, there's affordable housing. It's 163 some units. It's a $50 million project. It pieces together a bunch of different funding sources. It almost was a little too overcomplicated. And our colleagues, Landfield and Adam Gelter, who were really spearheading this, and Katie Westbrook, I think we overcomplicated it a bit, even our model, because we're partnering with Model in terms of the financing and trying to do scattered sites and historic buildings and deteriorate. It was a lot. We'll probably want to shrink it a little bit and not do such a big, but yes, we just finished Perseverance with our friends we did a partnership with over on Community Housing, where we've finished 32 units right on Vine Street. And that's all affordable housing. We've got Kaya Row there on Main Street in the 1100 block of Main. The 1200 block of Main, where we're doing some affordable housing and market rate together. You know, this issue about affordable housing is not a new issue. And it's in one way it's complicated, in another way it's not. And I do think that it's communities and targeting a revenue stream, and we can debate how that revenue stream comes forward.
Oh, we'll leave that to council.
Yeah. You know, we can create
and
one.
And Jason.
But there are also other things that, you know, Ohio's at a disadvantage, say, than Pennsylvania. In Pennsylvania, local governments – could issue bonds for first-time home buyers, home improvement loans, multifamily housing. You can't do that in Ohio. That's all limited to the State Housing Finance Agency. And I think communities, you know, I ran that agency in Pittsburgh for, you know, 6-7 years where we just focused on affordable housing in both consumer programs and developer-based programs, all of which contribute to the term affordable housing. It could be affordable housing and home ownership. It could be keeping folks that are in existing homes with home improvement loans to make sure they can maintain their homes and stay in a neighborhood. So there's it's a broader thing than just creating rental housing. And then that whole terminology is so broad.
Yeah.
Because it could be workforce housing, which means, you know, people making $30,000 or $40,000 a year down to people who really have no income for whatever reason because they have issues going on in their lives, to special needs housing, which is very critical, which is dealing with folks that either have, you know, mental challenges or physical challenges, you know, housing for single parents and things like that, that include daycare. There's all kinds of things as a community we should be pushing on. But, you know, I think I'm glad people want to be bold about this, but, you know, if you had $50 million in subsidy money a year, I just don't even think you could push that money out. I mean, this takes time, and annually you keep building up that money. What concerns me is that you end up not efficiently using that money and you don't get the best bang for your buck. But if you've got a more reasonable number, then you go to your friends at the state and said, okay, you know, State Housing Finance Agency, we're doing this. Can you match this? You know, can we go to the corporations and maybe they would start buying credits at a discount, therefore raising the amount of equity and subsidy, we could do this. And these are kinds of things we should be thinking about and doing and pushing. But there's not a simple solution to a complex problem.
17 years of 3CDC, and when you came to Cincinnati, and I know you walk around town a lot. I see you. I'm driving around. I see you walking around. And do you ever?
I hope I'm behaving when I.
Oh yeah. Do you ever catch yourself and stop and look at a project that's completed and think, I had my doubts?
Yeah, I think the one, and not only did I have my doubts, but I now look at it with, and I still believe it might have been our, at least to this point. I mean, look, we did the homeless facilities and things like that, but put that to the side. That was hard.
Yeah.
But I think Washington Park is the most democratic. You know, when we started it, we had the school board. We got in a big hassle with the school board because they owned the property that is now the northern part of that park, which is also essentially from the water feature north. That's all new park. That was a surface parking lot that was owned because that's where the old Washington Park School was. And then there was a debate about whether or not we should make it an active park with basketball courts and a swimming pool, because at one point in time, there was a basketball court and swimming pool there. And we've sort of fought through that. And, you know, can we manage it? Because it's one thing to build these things. It's another thing to manage it. And, you know, we were still a fledgling organization at the time, and I was worried that we didn't have the resources or the manpower or the know-how to do these things. And we, you know, fought our way through it. And, you know, I go to the Y at Central Parkway, and I'll go work out. And then afterwards, sometimes I'll walk up there and grab a sarsaparilla at that little porch there. And to see everybody, that melting pot there, it really brings a tear to your eye, you know, when you see little ones running through that water feature and folks come up and listen to jazz on Monday night. It's an eclectic crowd and a great crowd, and everyone's enjoying each other. And it is a cool scene and a very touching scene.
Absolutely. Another question. So 17 years ago when you first started, if the Steve Leeper of you 17 years ago looked out over that time period, would you say that's where we want to be in 17 years, or we're ahead of where we wanted to be? We're a little behind? What? Behind maybe is not the right word.
Yeah, yeah. No, but first of all, I'm not one of these kind of people that looks out that far. I'm sort of more of a practical person trying to see what I can do tomorrow, let alone 17 years.
Me too. What's today?
Yeah. But I do think you need a little bit of both of that. And I think we're advanced. In other words, I think, and I say this often, that I never envisioned that the street level presence in Over the Rhine would take off like it did. I did not see that coming. I do think we're behind on this connection between, in the 2 years we just described, this connection between Over the Rhine and Fountain Square and that sort of no man's land that we're starting to populate now with, you know, the new Kroger store and the new Court Street and the developments we've done with our friends at North American Properties at 8th and Sycamore. And we just need more of that. We need to keep pounding away at that. And I think, you know, where we are around the convention center, you know, we are where we are. But
the process is started.
It started. Yeah. And I probably think we could have been a little bit further along north of Liberty. But, you know, the last year, you know, that punched us in the gut. I mean, I don't want to start bitching about how tough it is with the pandemic and
but it is.
But from a real estate business, I mean, that you know, March and April of last year of 20, those were dark days. I mean, I was still coming into the office. I'd go for a run every day, and it was depressing. It was as if we had regressed, and it felt like you were in a sci-fi movie or something. Yeah, and where you were walking around, and you know, and then you know, we had the unrest last summer, and you know, we're all doing this reflection about our, you know, our racial relations, and that was hard to take. And but you know, the community, it steps up. It is resilient. And this city has proven to be resilient. And we are in, I tell you the truth, and I've heard this from multiple people, we are in much better shape than virtually all of our counterparts and even some of the major cities across the country. And it was because we didn't roll up in a ball in the fetal position when this was all coming. And I remember talking to the mayor. It would have been in April, May of 20, and actually came over to my house because we couldn't go out anywhere, and we were sitting on the front porch, and I said, look, we gotta keep moving on here. You know, we need to go after the Foundry, we need to go after Court Street, we need to go after Wilkerman. And we bundled those all together, and the mayor and city council, I mean, it was great. They supported us. I mean, we got great support, and the city council, you know, they tackled each one of those, at this, you know, and we were able to move on it. And then with this outdoor dining and what they've supported us with that, I mean, that's the city. That's not 3CDC. I mean, we implemented and executed for them, but they're the ones that funded this. And then we had some private financing from Duke Energy and the DeVoe Foundation and the Hale Foundation. But the city stepped up, and they were ahead of the curve on that, and they were pushing us. And I think because of that, we're just in a better place. I mean, Over the Rhine, some of our places are doing pre-COVID numbers.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. But
I was out like a month ago, and there were lines to get in places. And
yeah. And, you know, and we just got to be careful that we don't have a setback here. But, you know, we can all, you know, we look back and we have all issues that we all have to look at in terms of our community, and you guys in the business you're in need to challenge us constantly, and we need to be challenged. We're working in the public space. But every once in a while, we ought to reflect upon what we've done positively. And I think we've done some as a community, and the corporate community in town here is just, I've said this and I believe this genuinely. And this, I used to say it was sort of per capita. And now I'm beginning to think from a growth standpoint, the amount of financial resources, both from, you know, sponsorships and philanthropic, but, you know, what they put into our capital funds that allows us to do the things, and the amount of time commitment that these folks on our board, I mean, you know, Bob Castellini and Jim Zimmerman, who's still from previous chairman of Macy's, and Bob shows up at every meeting. I mean, he shows up. He's there. He cares. Yeah. He cares. I mean, John Barrett still shows up.
He cares.
I mean, they care. I mean, and the resources, they've never stopped. All this time, they've never stopped. And they never blinked an eye. And whatever we decided to step our, you know, foot into, they've supported us. And, you know, whether it's been the homeless facilities that we built and spent $42 million on, and I'm sure
if Kroger investing in the downtown grocery store.
Yeah. I mean, they all these events and partnerships. I mean, came out of this, although our assets took a battering. You know, as an organization, we were able to keep our head above ground. You know, we had to take our pay cuts and we had to do some, temporary layoffs and things like that. But, you know, we came out okay. And it's because we've got support like nobody else. And if somebody thinks they can go replicate this in another city, they got another thing coming. It just, we have a support structure like no other.
It's great stuff, Sherry.
I think we should end on a positive note.
Yeah.
Good. That's good.
Steve, thanks so much. It's always great to see you.
Thanks for having me and let me rant. I appreciate
it. Rant. Thanks, man.
All right.
All right. Thanks again to Steve Leeper. Always enjoy him coming on. And I've known Steve Leeper for a long time. And even before I came to the Inquirer, and I just a lot of respect for the work that he's done. Now we shift into our That's So Cincinnati moment of the week. And Sherry, I believe you're providing that this week.
My favorite event of the year, Paddle Fest, returned after a pandemic break last year. And, you know, it is a So Cincinnati moment. In that, like, this is a 9 mile or 4.5 was an option too, down the river from, you know, Schmidt Recreation, the field over there down to Gilday Park.
From the east end to what, Sailor Park? Is that Sailor Park?
Almost down there. If it's not Sailor Park, it's, you know, the end of Paddle Fest.
Way.
You know what you're thinking? Where the hell is it?
I don't care where we're at. Just get me the heck out of this boat.
It's such a unique way to see the city, and it brings people from all over the country. Like, I met people who flew in, were camping at the site, like, overnight to do something like this, because it's not every day you get to paddle on the Ohio River. You can put your boat in, and you could take all the chances you want. I never do, and paddle around a little bit. But that kind of distance with a lot of safety features. It's like a race, basically. You're not racing. There's races early in the morning. You're not racing, but it has all of those safety features with safety boats, fire departments, the sheriff's office, people really watching, you know, these really known paddle fest, like kayakers, like on the river, making sure everybody's good. And it's just such a fun way to see our city. And so I was really happy that it was back. I was happy that I completed it with no problems that morning. And it was great. And I was like, ooh, am I in better shape than I thought? No, no, no. By 3 o'clock, you do it early in the morning. You're kind of done by 11:30. By 3 o'clock, I thought I was going to die.
What time do you start?
We were in the water a little bit before 8:00.
Oh, it's not too early.
So, yeah, my arms were on fire.
They have like a little festival there at Schmidt Field.
Yep.
Out in the East End. Pretty neat.
It all goes to, a program, an adventure program that, you know, helps kids get out on the water who normally wouldn't be able to. Brewster Rhodes runs it, and it's really an incredible, it's a fun event that goes to a really good cause. But, I mean, a lot of our races are like that, too. The Flying Pig, it's not like we don't say that enough. Those races all benefit charities around here.
Definitely.
And are crucial to the charities, you know. They count on that money now, and we're missing a lot of it. The Pig's going to be back this year. We'll talk a lot about that coming up. I thought I was going to run it, but I don't think
the Pig is back this year.
I don't think that's going to be true after.
The Pig's back this year?
It is.
Late in the fall.
Different timing. So they're starting to really talk about what that's going to look like. It's an outside event. It's exciting that it's going to be back.
That's fantastic. Life getting back to normal. It's great.
All right, we got to go kayaking.
Let's go kayaking.
I know. Jason was kind enough to use his truck to bring my kayak there, and I tried to drag him into it with me.
But I told, what did I tell you after? I was like, why did I not do this?
I know, Jason.
It's so cool.
I always know best. You should listen. Ask Alex. That's okay. Yes, we'll go lake kayaking, which is easier, and there's so many great lakes. You know, I got a booklet in like kind of the packet where you sign up of the various places you could kayak, and I'm taking it as a bucket list. So you can do that with me.
Sounds great. I'll see you out on the water.